to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Frank Fahey with us as well. S&P futures are up. You got to be up. Got to be up because we got to put more money in. Up 4. Up 12, I'm sorry. Dow futures up 4. As our futures up 137. The, we have some movement from the Federal Reserve last week that even if the stimulus package doesn't go anywhere, they're going to throw more money in. So we are slaves to the money. Follow the money, Frank, they say.
Isn't that true?
Yes.
I was looking at the largest lobbyists over the past 20 years.
It used to be Fannie and Freddie.
Right now, the past 20 years, and this is at the state and national level, are pharmaceuticals and healthcare, insurance, okay, and that includes home insurance, just all lines of insurance, followed by utilities.
They also are big contributors to individual judges' campaigns, where they are... which is, to me, even more concerning, shall we say. But, anywho, that's one of the things we want to talk about today. Probably more with Mr. Flanagan, because he's an attorney, and I want to go over some of these contracts, which I don't think I want to bore you with. But
it's must-listen stuff.
Yeah.
Well, Bob writes in to you guys. He says, if there is no stimulus before the election, what's the incentive for after?
What do you mean? All these people pay money to these guys, right? I don't know. That's interesting, though. They're going to do something. I mean, it doesn't really matter. Just a question of who is in charge of it. I mean, the Democrats are going to pour stimulus, and they want to do 2.2, right? So it's where are we? We're 1-8-2-2 right now. Is that the spread?
Well, 1-8's Trump.
Yeah.
At what's the Senate at? What's McConnell? He has to have a number two.
Well, he's been pretty quiet. What do you suppose that is?
He's also pulled away from Trump somewhat. He did on COVID last week. About masks. He hasn't been in the White House since August 6th.
Yeah, he's, I'm not so sure how that all works out there. Obviously, let's just say the ventilation. I'd like to be a ventilation contractor calling on the White House saying, I think you guys need some work.
Now, who is that ventilation contractor?
I'm sure it's,
And which kid does he know?
I don't, well, they already had a bid when the Obama administration, didn't they?
They probably did, but in which case it's a different ventilation contractor. Everybody has favorites.
That's the truth. You wonder what is actually going through these people's minds. I mean, is he running?
McConnell?
Yeah.
He's running against a woman that was a combat fighter pilot.
I mean, does he have any chance of losing?
And it's closer than one might expect in Kentucky. Part of the problem they're having is in eastern Kentucky, Trump did not come through with any of his promises for coal miners. Have we heard anything about coal this election cycle?
No. Except more and more
There's
plants.
A reason.
More and more plants keep going down.
Right.
He
wasn't going to let it happen.
I have a kind of real stupid question. If we keep tearing down all these other plants, and yet all we want is electric cars and pickup trucks and everything, do you take care of the demand? I mean, You know, in California, can't wait to get rid of fossil fuels, yet they had rolling blackouts all over the place, or brownouts. And how do you, at some point, it's not in my backyard, if it's not in anybody's backyard, how do you have power? I'm just asking.
There's engineering in there that I can't respond to. I know batteries have become much more efficient.
That part's true.
I mean, and I'm talking even, you know, double A and 9-volt phone batteries. The bulk of a phone, the size of the phone, used to be defined by the battery. And, my phone will last a day and a half.
All the people with those adult toys, they last longer and longer. Isn't that special?
Yeah, but it transfers into other areas of life.
I would hope so. No, there's no doubt that the battery, but the transmission is also key, too. I mean, that's what you need. So it's amazing the stuff, Frank, that as I listen to the news, as I obviously do for the show and for my clients, about all the stuff that's not set. I mean, I was listening to 60 Minutes last night, and I was looking. They were listening to the Lincoln Project, or wherever those guys are, the guys in the Republican Party that are dying to get Trump out. Why do they not? I feel like asking one of those guys to come on the show and just ask the questions that they missed in 60 Minutes. I mean, they talked about hating Trump and how he's screwing things up, and they talked about burning the bridges where they're never going to be in the party again, because the party will never want him back. And that's the end of it. To me, that's the start of it. Okay, you guys feel this way, and these are your positions. Positions seem pretty reasonable to most people. Now, if the guy loses, you've pushed everybody to the Democrats. Now, do you sense a problem there, that there's no place else to go, that you got to go to the Democrats? There's a million Democrats, like me, that are totally disenfranchised with that party as well. So what happens 4 years from now? Should we try and find a third party, or are you just wait and see what happens to the Republicans and keep pushing people down? I mean, there's no end to the story. And I don't.
Well, you know, what's in the name? Maybe you start something called the Lincoln Party.
What I'm saying, they never ask that question. How do you not? How do you not say, okay, it's
because
November?
You only have an 18 and a half minute segment.
I would have got it.
Whatever a 60 minute segment is.
That's
they
the,
may have asked it, but that
no, they didn't.
You got to pare that stuff down.
Well, but I'm saying, to me, that's why I guess maybe I'm here and they're there.
That's why you have a radio show, Tom.
Well, but I'm saying, well, there's questions they don't want to go there, Frank. And I don't who decides where you go and where you don't. This whole idea of censorship, and you know, is
who decides. I know you hate me when I say this. A white man somewhere.
I'm gonna say that
ultimately
is from day one. I said from the day everybody booed him at Wrigley Field, I have never been a Trump guy. Because now I'm being accused of being, you know, but I also am somebody who says no matter who you are, nobody's all right or all wrong. I mean, you can't be. It's like nobody could get a zero on an SAT test. Until you knew all the right answers and purposely picked the wrong one, right?
You can, if, you know, sometimes you get closer than you would like and have to have somebody else take the test for you.
I understand what I'm saying. Getting a zero is just as hard as getting 100.
Oh, right. It's very hard.
Because that's unless you leave them all blank.
Right, because the randomization factor. I mean, it's multiple choice.
I mean, I question the. I'm reading. You know, I always read a lot of new stuff, but I'm getting more and more, especially from some of the listeners. I mean, Trump is a boor, and he came out attacking.
That's kind.
Yeah, we came out attacking the news people, and so they're going to attack back, or somebody's going to attack back. They attacked whatever. Whoever the hell knows who shot the first bullet in Hatfield and McCoy's. The simple fact is,
it's Trump, without a doubt. You can go back 40 years on this. You can go back to the Central Park Five.
Okay, but what I'm saying is,
he's used racist dog whistles since day one.
I was arguing
with the word bore. He's a word, bore is just impolite.
Okay. Worse than bore.
Yes.
but by the same token, has the press done the job properly from the get-go? Or have they allowed themselves to be co-opted into this thing to the point where they haven't done their job either? And I'm going to say, I'm going to put a big fat yes on that as well. Not like the Republicans do.
Well, I think what's happened on the press is the death of newspapers. There were professional journalists around, and lots of them, that held themselves to super certain standards. Friends of my kids got jobs working for newspapers right out of college that were, I don't want to say prestigious, but they wouldn't have had a chance 40 years ago doing it.
Well, if you did, you were on a city desk, right?
Right.
At night. How many people even know what the city desk is or was? I mean, for those
city
that don't,
news. Well, I remember that. You got a job there, and that was a big deal, but you all you did was run around the city and write constantly and work 20-hour days.
For those of you who don't know, was it just the four, Manny, you know this better than me, was it just the four newspapers, or were some of the TV shows involved, TV involved in well, as well?
I don't know.
I don't know who funded it, but yeah, the four newspapers funded it.
Well, there were a group, there were people that essentially manned the desk at night, right? It was at night.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that happened, a murder or accident or something, somebody there would report on it, and I believe all four newspapers could pick it up, correct?
Correct.
And
the newspapers had their own nighttime desks. I mean, they were fully staffed.
But I mean, that's where
the Tribune had three rock critics, and that was a full-time job.
Well, that's where Royko and all those guys got their start. They got a job on a city desk and ran around. That's why they knew the city so well. They'd run into the same characters. They knew who the policemen were because they'd run into the same captains every week, right? Out on some murder scene. And those guys, but there's none of that anymore. That folded, 20 years ago?
Yeah, well, we used to have Larry Schreiner on WGN, who knew every cop and every fireman in the city.
Well, Walter Jacobson used to go around and actually get budgets to go do stuff. Remember when he was the bum under Wacker Drive for a month?
Yep.
He did all this stuff, but he would get a budget, and he would, like, follow cops around to see if they did anything, follow, you know, aldermen around, see if they did anything. I bet you just went from restaurant to restaurant with the alderman, right? I don't think
Counselor's Row.
Oh, yeah. What was the place where they put the place by me?
The wire underneath the seats in different booths.
They put that was the place by me. Remember, it's still there, Manny, the Brehorn Tap. There's a place on, I lived at 70 West Huron, so Clark and Huron, was it two blocks over? Was on LaSalle? It was just a little west of me, and up a block. So it was on Superior and LaSalle, maybe? It's a place called the Brehorn Tap. I'd go in there once in a while, but I was only the only person in the place at night. But evidently, they did a rousing lunch business, and at one point, there was the bar, and up on a balcony, there was this big round table. And evidently, that's where a bunch of pals would meet every day. And, you know, evidently they did all right at lunch because they sure as hell didn't do anything at 8 o'clock at night. I'd be drinking a beer by myself. And saying, why'd I walk over here? And evidently they put a mic under the table, didn't they, Frank? I don't know.
Yep.
What. Where would they get on that? What was the name? That wasn't Silver Shovel. That was Traffic Court. It was another one. But they put a mic under the table. These guys were there every day. They walk in, and that thing would just start spewing what they were saying and who they were going to do what to. And
yeah, Graylord was Counselor's Row.
Yeah, yeah. That was right by. That was owned by Jack Bowling, the guy who used to own Sirius on Counselor's Row, didn't he?
Really? I think he did too.
Yeah.
It was a good place. Anything Bowling owned was good.
Yeah. Well, Jack's a great guy. I wonder if he's still alive. Anyway, nice guy. He's still in,
Well, his son traded with us, John.
Yeah. Anyway, so what I wanted to go with this insurance thing is, I mean, I've mentioned from time to time how one of the everything, I think if you listen to the show, at some point, if you remember, which I don't expect people to remember 2 year ago shows, but everything kind of comes around to roost. We talked about the judges in Illinois, now that they become elected in a lot of areas, now they're raising this money. And who's giving them the money? And why? And what do you get? Well, one of the biggest things, as Frank brought up earlier, One of the biggest groups that give money to judges' campaigns are insurance companies. Right? So there was a judge in somewhere in Western Illinois. His biggest contributor was State Farm. And he got this big case and of State Farm, and he refused to recuse himself. He's like, what do you mean? I can be... Well, State Farm sure doesn't... They don't think they're paying for him to be able to be perfectly honest on a State Farm case, do they?
No.
I mean, even if he was... The only guy I've ever... Well, I'm sure there's been more than the guy. The only big-time politician that I ever thought had zero morals to the check you just gave him was Bill Clinton. I think he'd get a check, he'd tell you everything he wanted to hear, he'd walk away and forget who the hell you were. I don't know if that's...
I think you're being far too kind, politicians as a group.
I mean, he's probably the only guy that could... Like Bush, on the other hand, everybody who got a check from, he seemed like he had to do something for. He had to go to war, he couldn't raise taxes, he did everything those guys wanted him to do. Clinton would never have done it. Clinton was totally amoral, it seemed to me. He could come and get there. Frank, what's your concern? Well, my concern is the environment. Here's $2 million. He'd walk away and go, Frank, who? I honestly thought Clinton was late. I know that just could be an impression, but...
But he would know my wife's name.
You might know more than that about her. You don't know. Anyway... So anyway,
sorry, Matty, I shouldn't encourage him.
Yeah. Anyway, but now I was reading this thing yesterday, and of course I'm listening to it on actually News Radio 78. I'll give him a plug. He talked about how none of these small businesses are getting paid on their business interruption insurance for the COVID. And of course, the thing that caught my ear was they without even probably thinking he was doing it. The guy who was doing the report says, well, up until now, it's mostly been small firms, and they've all been losing, like, right at one after another. With the idea being that because there was no property damage, that there could be no business interruption due to, quote, damage. Right? So if there was no storm, or there was no tree that fell on your place, that caused, quote, damage that caused you to have interruption insurance, the policy doesn't cover, is the interpretation of the insurance company that so far has been held up by the courts. And which to me is total BS. But the upshot of the article was, or the report was, now some company, they named it, I don't think it was Hartford Insurance, right? It was Hartford somebody. Now there's a big company in there demanding payment, and we'll see how much better they do in the courts. Just the thought that you could have a report like that without expounding on what you just said. Because if what you just said is true, what does it say about America?
That means whoever can afford the best lawyers for the longest period of time wins.
Let's put it this way. We all know that. And we know that but do we really want to codify it and say, well, that's just the way it is. The smaller people just might as well forget it. This isn't for you. But we know it happened.
This has been a problem for quite a while.
I understand it.
I was doing research, and it was like when SARS came out in 2003, there were some people very impacted who could not get their business continuity insurance. I had a problem with disability insurance. I had a heart attack at age 46. And everybody goes, hey, you shouldn't trade anymore. Well, I had a very nice insurance policy. I had made a lot of money for a while, and they would not budge.
Just Paul Revere?
No, it was actually a real company. It's, what was the name of the company? Mass Mutual, or Mass Liberty, no, it was Massachusetts. The one that the older brother of a fellow trader worked at.
Well, there you go. Well, there was a...
No.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. But there was a policy, get a load of this, Manny. There was a policy on the trading floor, I had for a while, actually. Paul Revere, and what they did is they insured you disability-wise in the job you were in. Now, nobody else, well, I'll explain this in a second. Nobody else does that or did that. In other words, if you're a neurosurgeon and you're the best in the world and you make, you know, $1 million a year, okay, and all of a sudden something happens where you're in a car crash and you break three fingers and they're fine, but you're not really a neurosurgeon anymore, even though, you know, you can do anything else. What they'll do is they'll insure you for the million, but if you become like the head of a physician's group and now you're making $2 million, they're not going to pay you because you're still making $2 million, right? So it your disability, they subtract the other money you're paying, right, Frank? I don't know the exact mm-hmm. formula, but anyway, there was a policy on the floor that said, well, we're going to insure you as a floor trader, or we're going to insure you as a neurosurgeon. So as a neurosurgeon, I can't be a neurosurgeon anymore, but now I'm a consultant. I make four times as much. They still were going to pay you the $1 million a year, even though your salary might have been five somewhere else. So it was a very unique policy. And, of course, a few guys weaseled their way into, you know, into getting this disability where...
The biggest weasel I knew on the floor got it.
there were a few of them. So we'd see the guys at the health club, and they're fine, and yet they're getting disability, right? Well, I can't be on the floor anymore. It's too stressful. Okay, you're at the East Bay Club playing tennis all day. I can do that. Anyway, there was some of that going on, but they had that kind of problem. Most disability policies only pay if you don't make any money at all, right? Or they pay the difference between what you used to make and what you're paying now, right?
They hide behind a contract. You could read it. You get sold on what it was, and then it wasn't true.
True. Well, that's...
Oh, I'm so sorry, Frank. It's not me.
Yeah, it's
and
not me.
And that's what's happening to these poor companies.
One of my former buddies, Big Shot Chicago, just retired, by the way. His insurance companies, he goes, I used to work for one. Insurance companies are very good at charging you. They're not bad at investing money, but they're really bad on paying. This whole thing brought up, the guy I used to share the spot with in the OEX, my buddy Ryan, a terrific guy. His parents had a place down in the, is it polite to say the Redneck Riviera? Down in Biloxi somewhere?
Sure.
It was nice down there, and, you know, if you don't mind the people, this was 30 years ago. They weren't on the water. They were, I'm going to say, across the street maybe, Frank, and they had this condo building and a nice place and swimming pool and the whole bit. Well, one of the hurricanes waxed right into the place, right? And the place is gone. All that's left is the slab where it was. Like, if you didn't know where it was. Now, my question is, where does everybody's TV, where does all your clothes, your alarm clocks, where does all that stuff end up? On somebody's lawn, like a mile away, or what?
It's or out in the ocean.
Can you imagine the debris that is someplace when that happens? Not to mention the building materials in the place. Anyway, the place is gone, and nobody's there. When I say nobody was there, nobody's there when it happened, because everybody was fully evacuated. So, of course, the insurance company says, well, and of course, you know, the insurance is the usual, water damage, wind damage, you know, blah, 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 where you think you're covered. Now, what the insurance company means is if the wind, you know, blows a part of the roof off and it's raining and there's water damage, we'll, like, cover that. If there's any kind of water damage, it seeps in through a... Then in there, their out is, we don't do storm surges. That's not in there. And people are like, well, isn't that water flooding? No, it's not. And so I'm going to say it took them multiple years to get like 40 cents on the buck back, Frank. And plus, nobody knew whether the wind blew the place inland or whether the storm surge knocked them off. Yet they were convinced it was a storm surge. And that was their story, and they're sticking to it. And when they wound their way through the courts, you know, at least 5-year lead time for the case to get heard, and who knows what they... But, I mean, they never got full dough at all. And
that's how it works.
But, I mean, you would think that somewhere between water damage and wind damage, you're kind of covered in a hurricane, but not so. There's this slight little bit there about storm surge. And, by the way, storm surge causes most of the total disasters, right? The other stuff...
I would think it does.
No, they're probably right. The thing probably got whacked by an 8-foot wave, and God knows where it sent it. But it's just, anyway, bizarre. Well, so Frank, how many more days in a row, if there is no package, can we keep going up? Same stocks. I got Microsoft up 330 today. I got Apple up 342. How much more money can we put in these stocks, for God's sake?
Well, we're going to see areas. I think right now we're going to see the big name pharmaceuticals getting more money, like Eli Lilly. If I had to pick anything right now to be in for the next month or next 3 months, it would be Lilly.
But these names keep changing. I mean, a month ago it was AstraZeneca and who was the other one? It wasn't Lilly. It was
Pfizer.
Pfizer. And now all of a sudden it's, according to 60 Minutes, last minutes.
Those look okay. And the good thing about Pfizer and Eli Lilly is they don't lie to you as much as the other, as noticeably. At least they throw out a few caveats. Am I saying invest the barn on it? Or the whole shoot kit and caboodle? No. But also, for an options trader like me or you, there's liquidity in those two stocks.
Well, I've got my people along some AstraZeneca kind of on the last go-around because they had done a lot of work on SARS,
mm-hmm.
not just because I heard it on TV. And we, we're up a little bit, but it isn't going anywhere. Just okay. I mean, obviously they're not on the front burner anymore. They're up a little bit. But it's not. It certainly was no home run at all. Let's put it this way.
Well, we are. The market's not open for home run hitters right now. I made a very good living being a singles and doubles hitter. Anytime I tried to out hit my weight, I got in trouble because it meant I was ignoring some risk.
Well, that's true, Frank. Thank you.
That's just me.
Thank you very much, Bud. The Irish almost found a way to lose that game, eh?
No, I don't think so.
Well, the two turnovers, one more turnover, they could have lost.
Right. Yeah, actually, it was the best Florida State has looked in the second half. But no, Notre Dame is a playoff contender right now. The only problem with this weekend was both Texas and Oklahoma couldn't lose simultaneously.
The Red River Classic. Where's that played? It was played in Dallas, right?
Yes.
It used to be in the old Cotton Bowl. Now, was it the...
On the Texas State Fairgrounds. In fact, the fair used to be open for this, for the Red River
shootout. Their state fair, Maddie, is like 2 months after everybody else's. It's in October. It's weird. Anyway, Frank, thank you. SP Futures up 17.
Okay.
NASDAQ Futures up 171. To the moon, Alice. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Lone North Bank Stocks and Jocks. I'm out. Mr. Matt Weber, SP Futures up 17. NASDAQ Futures up 159. Dow Futures down 2. A lot of stuff, and then we got Goldman Sachs down 254. It's the big loser in the Dow, but we've got Apple up 321. So I don't know. I think the Dow futures, I got United Health up two bucks as well. So I think that number will sneak up here in a second. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 50.4%, FTSE up 2. Call that flat. CAC around up 29, positive 0.6. For Asia, we got Nikkei down 61. That's 0.2. Shanghai, however, up 86, 2.4. Remember, these guys were closed most of last week. Hang Seng up 530, 2.2%. They had a central bank move in China where the yuan weakens against the dollar, so that's what's causing the Shanghai and the Hang Seng to go up. Of course, you always want your currency going down for purposes of exporting. That's so good for importing and for your people. Just as a review, Friday Dow was up 161. S&P futures were up 30, NASDAQ futures up 158. So we've been up every single day really since last Tuesday. As we've, you know, Wisconsin, we're talking, we could be up like, we could be to the, you know, absolutely the moon, and also we just keep talking. Bond, 0.77, that's up one basis point. The Bund, still minus 0.53. Japanese, 10-year, positive 0.03. We've got oil down 46 cents, the 40.14, still above 40. Brent down 47. 42.38, natural gas up 13 cents, 287. We must be going to get some cold weather, which Maddie will probably tell us about. RBOB down a penny to 118. We got gold up $1.90 to 1928. So we're kind of firmly over 1900 here. Silver up 14 cents, 25.25. Copper 308, pretty far over $3 now. Maddie, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have one major issue in the area, and that's due to a fatal crash that happened at about 3:30 this morning. I-57 northbound between Sibley, which is right at 147th Street, and Dixie Highway are closed for that investigation. Traffic is backed up to 159th Street, so northbound I-57 you'll want to avoid if at all possible. Looks like the it was a fatal car versus a semi. That happened earlier this morning. Traffic is forced off at 147 to go around the accident, but can use the entrance ramp to get back on there. The investigation will continue to last throughout the morning, but that's the major issue right now. The rest of the area expressways are completely clear. No delays anywhere on the screen, no accidents or stalls on the expressways or off, just northbound I-57 at 147th. Weather today, it's going to be very nice early. Then we'll have some showers that are going to move in around midday into the early afternoon. We'll reach a high of 68. Then the rain should be done by about 2 or 3 o'clock, and then it'll be pleasant and a bit cooler. But again, a high of 68 with some showers midday. Right now it's crystal clear and 60 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 98 today. Right now it's clear and 68. In sports, the Bears, of course, played on Thursday. The rest of the NFL took the field yesterday. It was the Arizona Cardinals getting back on track. They're now 3-2 as they blew out the Jets in New Jersey 30-10. Sunday Night Football, Seahawks rallied back down 13 to top the Vikings on a last-second drive. to score a touchdown with just under 15 seconds to play. They beat Minnesota 27-26 to remain undefeated. And lastly, the NBA Finals are now done, and the Lakers have won their 17th NBA championship. They took care of the Heat 106-93, winning that series 4-2.
Who's the MVP, Butler or LeBron?
I think it was LeBron. When the Lakers were up 30 in the first half, I turned it off, so I didn't actually watch the ceremony. I'll pull that up real quick.
So the Bulls happy they traded Jimmy?
I wasn't happy at the time, and I'm still not happy. Jimmy wanted to be here. It was an ego thing between him and Gar Pax, and why you would trade a guy that you can clearly build a championship team around is insane to me. And then so they traded him to Minnesota, and then he didn't want to be in Minnesota, so they get rid of him to Philadelphia. He didn't want to be there, and now he seems to have found a home in Miami. His teammates love him, his coaches love him, and he's one of the best 5 or 10 players in the league.
That coach managed to hang in there down there. I thought he was there just because
that coach is a really good coach. He's arguably the best coach in the NBA, certainly in the top 3 or 4.
Well, when they put him there, he was just somebody that LeBron liked, right? And then all of a sudden,
no, it was somebody Pat Riley liked.
Pat Riley liked.
Yeah, and thought that he's a young coach that you know is a rising star, and he kind of threw him in the fire. And talk about a tough first job when you got star players like that who you know could very easily not respect you, and maybe they didn't at first, but he earned their respect, and they had some success there, and then he's been shown how good he is after those guys left.
Is he as good as the guy in Boston, you think?
I think he's just as good, if not better. I really like both those guys. I like the guy in Toronto as well that won the title last year, Nick Nurse. And then you still have Popovich and Kerr, and those guys are really good as well.
What about our guys?
Billy Donovan, you know, he was really good with Oklahoma City, had a lot of good players, of course. People seem to think he's a pretty good coach, so we'll see.
Still, they got no X's and O's.
He's a really good college coach.
Got no X's and no O's.
That's true. You need a lot more talent than what they have right now.
Well, John, how are you?
Tom, I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing all right. I'm curious. I mean, obviously, they have this constant curiosity of the meshing between the politics and the market and the Federal Reserve and everything. And I never dreamed with the stimulus being put off over the weekend. I mean, I'm not positioned this way or anything, but that I can't believe we're up again today. I mean, this constant encouragement the market is giving the Congress to come up with giving the market more money, even though, other than Trump saying the deal is off, everything they do is just encouragement and make it go up. It's crazy stuff. I mean, I'm looking at this, these money supply numbers, and, the last 6 months, M2 is up 38%. God's sake. In the big inflation fiasco of the late 70s and early 80s, I'm going to go through my notes here, but I think the worst we ever had was 12.5%, so it's three times that. And yet we've got buffoons telling us there's no inflation. And even though we've had people on CNBC saying that the home builders are raising their prices every 2 weeks and lumber's up 100% this year, and despite any, they close their ears. Remember, when you were a little kid, did you ever like put your hands over your ears of your mother and say you're not listening? Kid did that at one point or another. And that seems like what our Fed is doing right now. And, problem is, we weren't getting paid by our mother. We're paying these guys to do that. Plus, they're supposed to be adults, not 3-year-olds or 5-year-olds. And
Tom, you remember the hand wringing in the 70s over inflation, and
the national news
practically every night. You know, in the Ford years, you know, the whip inflation now buttons you were asked to wear. And this is like a crisis mode. People were freaking out, and now we're three times that rate. Yeah. Nobody seems to care. You don't hear hardly anything about it, really.
Well, it's not coming out in the CPI yet, because they're very careful to lie to us. And so you don't have it. And the interesting part, John, is, well, I don't know, this goes too much, but is that one of the appreciable villains in the whole situation is medical care. But because most people, but what's more important, most people that have control of the news and are the big shots don't pay for their own insurance. So they don't notice it. So it's never front and center. Yet if you happen to be somebody who pays for your own insurance, your experience with inflation over the last 20 years is dramatically different than anybody else's. I mean, we're talking about a CPI that they're up to about 6 or 7%. That the CPI has medical care at 6 or 7% of the basket when it's 19 to 20% of the GDP. So then that's been going on forever. Now, that is about as close to institutional lying as you can get. It should be 20%. And it shouldn't be whether the cost of a specific procedure to an insurance company that has a deal with a hospital, how much that goes up. It should be how much you and I are paying. There's a big difference. Because right now, there's a total disconnect. I mean, you can sit there and say, I mean, Obama did this a couple times. He said, well, we've kept a lid on healthcare expenses because, you know, these 20 procedures are only up 2% from last year. They might be to Blue Cross, but Blue Cross has doubled their price to you and me.
Right.
So the fact that Blue Cross is making the money doesn't make it better. Right? All it means is that the doctors aren't making as much as they should, and it's going to Blue Cross executives or United Health or someplace. So, I mean, it's...
Well, go ahead. It's a parallel situation with higher ed, too. I don't know, you know, number-wise, where this, you know, stacks up beside health care, but when you look at what, you know, how many people really pay for a college education these days, or are going to pay it off for the rest of their, you know, grandchildren's lives at the rate we're going. And who's profiting from that, and who's, you know, being completely cut out of, the, you know, any kind of earning power until you know, get from underneath of this debt. And that's kind of like the curse of the young, whereas, you know, healthcare, you know, it tends to hurt people in, you know, the declining years more than in, you know, early on. But now we've got it coming from the other side of the age brackets with higher ed, and it's the same kind of crunch, I think.
You know, it's funny you mention that, John, because one rainy Saturday day, I actually dug around and I can find them again, but my Windows 7 and the one computer I do this on, all my favorites got wiped away by Microsoft one day. To say that I think Microsoft is the biggest monopolist around and always has been is, well, it's an understatement, but I actually went back and looked at, say, okay, if you were to ask, let's say the guys who work in the building, the Hispanic dudes that are here, if you were to ask them, what are your three biggest issues with, you know, costs going up? Every person, if you're not, you know, I won't say a 1%er, but a 25%er that has your health care paid for by your work, actually it's probably more like 60%, but I don't want to exaggerate too much, they're going to say health care, property taxes, and education. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, and yet, so I went through and I did some work on all three. And it turns out I went back to 2000. And I was able to find out on a bunch of different sites what the average... Now, again, I don't know... I mean, I'm not research-friendly enough to be able to go through the, you know, the appendectomy to the stitches to all the other crap that you probably, you know, should do. But I essentially did the easy part and I said, okay, how much did companies used to pay for health insurance for their employees in 2000 versus today? So 20 years. Now, first of all, what I did was I put $1 into the CPI calculator in 2000, and $1 then is worth $1.52 today. So if you look at the inflation over the last 20 years, it's roughly 50%, call it 55 or 60, because this was a few months ago I did this. If you go into how much companies paid, I let loose, and this is not rigorous, it would be a C paper for Milton Friedman. I didn't go into the deductibles and how much more you had to come up with, and where your deductible used to be $50 and now it's $5,000. I didn't go into any of that, John. I just looked at the gross numbers that the firms are paying. And it's roughly 285% higher than it was in 2000. Okay? So it's roughly five to six times the CPI. And I went, now there is a site, this one I'm sure I could find again, is every single college tuition, room and board, all the way back to 2000. On what they charge in-staters, what they charge out-of-staters. And lo and behold, I averaged out a bunch of the places. And again, this is being charitable because I didn't, I didn't count the new upstart of out of state versus in state. If I did that, it'd be even worse. You know what, John? It's the same number, 285. Same number. And then I said, okay, how do I find out what local education is? And I said, okay, that's in everybody's property taxes, right? Because you're a property tax guy. Somewhere between 50% or 60%, virtually everybody's property tax is local schools, right? It's about the right number, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I went back and I said, okay, now here was a prop. Trying to find that for the country is a royal pain in the ass. So I settled it on Illinois. So this is the only one I'm a little flaky on. But in Illinois, property taxes are roughly three times what they were in 2000. Do you think that number is accurate? Or 285, somewhere in there. So the three things that are bothering people the most, all three of them are up pushing three times.
Lockstep.
Lockstep. They're like three times what they were in 2000. And if you look at the CPI, which maybe I'll do this next week when you're in. I'm going to say they've got medical care is up to 7%. I think higher education is probably something like 6% or maybe 5%. And then property taxes, I don't know where they bury them in there. Owner's equivalent rent, let's say 4 or 5. So if you look at the CPI, probably those three things I just mentioned are probably 15% of the basket. You show me the fool that is only paying 15% of their income on those three things.
Oh.
It's not even close.
65%.
Yeah. Well, if you're older and having to buy some prescription drugs, you can easily blow through your Social Security. I mean, what is your Social Security's what? 2000, 2100 for most people? I'm going to say the two new blood thinners, Eliquis and Xarelto, $500 a month. So it's a quarter of your take home. Your Social Security check for your blood thinner for 1 month. If you're on that. Now, there's got to be elderly people that are on $1,500 a month stuff. And the point being, it's not about can you get this person to pay for it? Can you write the company and get it? The point is, that's the friggin' cost. Right? And I'm going to say that I've read stuff. I should have saved. I used to run all this stuff off. My brother said I was killing all the trees in the world. So now I try and keep it on my computer, and I'm not doing as well with that. There was a young lady who wrote this pretty serious article regarding healthcare and people's salaries. And she claims that in the last 12 years, it wasn't 20, the last 12 years, that they would say, even when you were working, say, at the university, all of a sudden next year they're going to say, well, John, you got to pay $50 a month toward your hospitalization, otherwise we can't afford it. Or then next year it might be 100, it might be 150. She claims that for virtually everybody, except for, the high-end people, that the increases that you had to contribute to your health care were more over the 12-year period than your raises. So even though you were, quote, covered at the beginning and covered at the end, your entire raise is taken up on how much you now had to contribute into, quote, your coverage. But I think because most of the people that control the news and control in our CNBC, they have all their stuff paid for, I don't think they worry about it. Or they're not allowed to, or a lot of
them. They can't talk about it.
They can't talk about it. And yet, this is the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and it has been for a long time. And on neither part.
Tom, if you consider that cost alone, which is horrible, but look at just the process of health care in the last 10, 20 years, where the waits to get in to see a doctor, the hassles in insurance coordination, the delays, just the inadequacy of the system. I think. I mean, I see, just from an anecdotal standpoint, a real decline in my, satisfaction with the way health care is provided to people, at least in my age group.
Well, doctors don't run their own practice. Most of
right,
them join
right.
something
They've
else.
They've been corporatized and, conglomeratized. And, they don't, they're not really what they always used to be. They were not, they were always, there was a sales element in everything they did, and they made house calls, and they tried to be on call and keep their patients happy, and now they're trying to keep, you know, their stockholders happy first. I think that's you know, it's like it's happened in the veterinarian business too. These places have been acquired in a way that leaves consumers out in the lurch. They're the last people who get factored into this. I mean, they're there to pay for it and to, you know, justify its existence, but they're certainly not there as the reason these places exist anymore.
Well, who would have thought 40 years ago that the doctor wouldn't be close to being the highest paid person in the healthcare community?
And they were entitled to be that too, and nobody really ever questioned what doctors earned. They knew they did very well, and they were very happy to pay their fees, and would have gladly paid more probably in many cases, because these were like trusted family associates. They lived on the fringes of everybody's family.
Even Dackie Adams on Gunsmoke, he was always buying Festus a beer.
Right.
Because he had the and he never charged half the people with gunshot wounds and stuff because they couldn't pay.
This crusty old guy too, but everybody loved him. Everybody trusted him. Everybody wanted him around.
You know who wanted him around? He was the one who had a thing with Kitty.
Yeah.
there's my favorite movie stars that died a horrendous death. Amanda Blake. You know what she died from?
Oh, it was a corrupted blood transfusion.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Corrupted blood transfusion. And Maddie, one of the scariest and magazines that ever got dropped off at our doorstep when Dr. J and I and my guy who still works for me and takes care of people's positions, Jim Duran, we lived down on a big house on the south side back in the day when we were all young and chasing women and doing whatever else we were doing. We had six cars in front of the place. It was funny as hell. The guy, we move in, and the guy next door comes over and goes, you know, I take care of this neighborhood. Which one of these cars is yours? And I go, they're all ours. And he goes, what do you mean they're all yours? The best was Dr. J had this Corvette that he and his brothers, of course, had redone from the frame up, right? Of course, they'd forgot to hook stuff like a defroster and a heater and things like you sort of need in this climate. So the thing, Jan had never drive the damn thing. It just sat out in front. So the kid across the street loved it, right? So Jan and I are watching a football game one day, and it's this, like, stormy day. This kid across the street comes up the door. Hey, buddy, God, this tree fell on your Corvette. Jan goes, that's okay. It's fourth quarter of the Bear game. I'll check it out later. The kid's like, buddy, it's your Corvette. I don't give a crap. The kid thought he was nuts, but which is probably true, but... Jack goes, there's a football game, man. Who cares about the curve? Anyway.
we need more people like that in the neighborhood now.
See, I had an old GTO, and then I had like a regular truck. Then we had our limousine. Then Jan had a Firebird, and JD had some old jalopy. So we had like six cars. The neighbors thought we were absolutely stark raving bad, but we never caused any trouble. We were okay. Anyway, but the... Yeah, what were we saying? I forgot. My train of thought ran off the rails. But no, it's you start when you don't look at the numbers correctly, Jan. You can't. I'm reminded way back in the day. I was going down south. Take my mind. I've told this story 100 times. One of the Federal Reserve guys from the late '60s to the '70s. He was on the board of Federal Reserve, and he goes, "Well, you know." This guy, Milton Friedman, used to run around saying it was all our fault, and we kept denying that there was inflation. We were convinced it was just because of the Europes and the oil embargo and that stuff. And then we said, okay, it's just oil, so let's pull oil out of the mix because it's those dirty Europes. And all of a sudden we said, well, wait a minute, there's a lot of oil used in the food distribution. I mean, you got to dry the grains, right? You got to drive the grain to the barge, and you got to use barge fuel to get it down the river, and so let's pull food out too because it's essentially influenced by oil. So let's pull oil and food out. He says, finally, one meeting, we're sitting there and go, we pulled out everything we can pull out, and guess what? We still got inflation. I think we got inflation. He says, we were in denial for probably 3 years. So that's why it is such a lagging indicator, Jan, and it's, you know, when you mentioned it. Maybe because I was more in the middle of it, but I can't think of anything that screwed up various parts of the economy because it's never even. And that's what the powers to be are banking on. I mean, if they were to say, we want inflation, Everybody walk into the Federal Reserve, take your all your money, bring it in $1 bills, and you're going to walk out with $2 bills. Everybody knows everybody would just adjust, right? If I owed you $10, I now owe you $20, right? If a stock is 500, it's going to be 1,000. But we don't want that. We don't want everybody to participate. We just want some people, right? I mean, you want to be, after COVID and after all the accommodations and everything, you want the McDonald's that sneakily one day can say, guess what? Our dollar menu, which we still call a dollar menu, is now all $1.99. I mean, I'm going to say that McDonald's same store sales the other day, the stock came out and everybody was happy as a clam. They're up like, what, 5-6% same store sales? I'm going to say their prices are up a minimum of 10%, John. And we've lost that entire infrastructure of reporting that. And back in 1978, if somebody came out and said, John Flanagan walked out and you made widgets, you'd say, our sales are up 10%. By the way, our prices are up 12%, so we're actually down 2% on the widgets. Nobody does that. We've lost the entire infrastructure for reporting on inflation. So when Home Depot comes out and says our same-store sales are up 2%, they don't have to tell you. They don't want to tell you, oh, by the way, the average prices across the board are up whatever, right? They don't want to. Or won't, or shouldn't, or nobody's asking them to because everybody thinks there just isn't any. But how can lumber prices be up 100% since the beginning of the year, and yet Home Depot's same store sales be up 5%, and one doesn't affect the other? How can that be?
It's just juggling, you know, these numbers in a way that defies, you know, good sense.
Anyway, John, we're going to do it after break. S&P futures up 19. NASDAQ futures up 194. This tree might actually grow to the sky. We'll see. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Miley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Giant Flynn. SP Futures now up 20. We're at the point now where if we're down 18, that's buying. We go down 2 points, that'll be buying the dip. There's just relentless buying. Has been now since really Tuesday night. Pretty unbelievable. I mean, it's really unbelievable, but it's happening. Hey, we got I just got an email from one of our listeners, man. It's hilarious. I don't know if you... So, you know, see, even I know some of this stuff that, you know, anyway, one of the listeners was in some bar evidently, and was talking about how the technology of today touches the technology of the past, and how you can actually, some bars now, you can play songs in the jukebox from your app, right? Which, I guess that's been there a while, but, and, I said that there's a guy who sits in this one bar, this person must have been, and if they manage to get their songs ahead of somebody else's, kind of, I remember in the Tripoli, there was a guy, he used to come in, I haven't seen him in ages, so I haven't been there in a while either, but, let's just say, ridiculously conservative to the point where very loud-mouthed, kind of, almost racist kind of thing. Anyway, not a bad guy, just, you know, a blast from 50 years ago. And the guys at the bar, whenever he'd play something in the jukebox, they'd all jump ahead of him with their apps just to piss him off. And he'd be sitting there, he'd go, where the hell's my song? I don't see anybody else going up there. Who the hell's getting ahead of me? Nobody, of course, would let on at all that they kept playing songs that they knew he didn't like ahead of his on the apps.
You better buy that jukebox a drink.
Yeah. Anyway, John, I want to talk a little bit since you and Brendan are, well, Lou as well, but Lou always likes to talk about other stuff. I was stunned yesterday just by the, not so much that it happens, everybody knows that it happens, but I was talking to Frank a little bit earlier about this loss of business loss insurance regarding the COVID. And of course, again, the guy's giving a report on News Radio 78, and he says, well, you know, all these small companies have lost every time in court. But now a big company is saying, I want my money. And we'll see if that makes a difference. And in all the thing that's wrong with America, nothing could capsulize it more than that particular statement from this guy. I don't think he knew he was saying that, but I'm sure he didn't have a clue. But the idea, I mean, everybody knows that the big guys, the bigger law firms, do better in courts than the rest of us. But to encapsulate it that much, this is the way it is, and this way you should expect it, and only big guys can get a... Now, does that mean if the big guy wins, little guys can go back and redo it, or what? I'm saying no.
And probably not. I mean, I would bet that it's been a case from the beginning that with the kind of business, you know, insurance business that some of these places can throw at various carriers, they can get coverage or other, you know, promises rolled into it that will cushion them in the case of something like this, where not everybody is able to use any kind of leverage against an insurance company because they don't have anything more than their own family business that they're trying to cover. So I would, you know, typically, from what I have read or heard, something like COVID-caused business interruptions wouldn't be covered.
Why?
I think it's always been a case where the illness or something like that of workers or you know, custodians, whatever, that doesn't qualify as a business interruption that's covered. So I'm surprised that anybody, there must be some insurance being written that, you know, you can get around that somehow. But that I think is something that the companies have always kind of stayed away from.
Well, they have, there's a concept here, and this is what I kind of wanted to ask you, is evidently when there's a contract, not, you know, me never having a law class, I mean, I get fascinated by this, that every single word in a contract, how can I say this, is there for a reason, right, and stands on its own. Is that
right? I mean, certain buzzwords, you know, that are accepted in that particular trade or whatever as carrying all these connotations with them, or because of legal decisions that have gone either way. These buzzwords have you know, extreme importance.
Well, what the point here is that just about all the policies commonly require direct physical loss of or damage to the property.
Right.
And what the court cases are saying, since there's no damage to the property, the insurance companies are telling you to say, well, if there wasn't a windstorm that damaged the building so you couldn't open, then there's not the business, that's the only kind of loss you can have. And it, you know, so if there's no physical damage, that there's no loss, is the interpretation that they're winning in, evidently. According to this.
And contrast that to something like the, you know, the flood of the Chicago Tunnel system back
right.
in 1992, where these basements were inundated, and for months, you know, Carson Peary Scott, Marshall Fields, office buildings couldn't use their basements. That was a covered loss, you know, from
right.
a business interruption standpoint.
But now the guys who are writing this article from the Law Review say, no, you can't put, if loss and damage were synonymous, they wouldn't both be there. So they're saying that by the legal principles of contract, the fact that they're both there means they must mean different things.
Well, they might mean different things in different jurisdictions, or you have different, you know, histories in particular industries. So they're in there just as you have everything covered, perhaps.
Well, they're saying that the policyholders have argued that damage is a broad concept. Encompasses COVID-19 related shutdowns, to which insurers argue there must be physical damage to infrastructure, which term does not appear in the policies, and so far that they've won. They're saying that, like, a shutdown from, but now the, they said you can't just use an expansive approach to the term damage is not the policyholder's only position. Policyholders argue the alternative, based on the rule that every word in a contract should be given a meaning, the disjunctive in physical loss of or damage to property means that the coverage grant applies where is a loss or damage. And it must mean, loss means something different than damage, or it wouldn't be there. I guess is what I'm trying to ferret out of you. In other words, you would just say damage if you didn't mean something different by loss.
You know, they're not synonymous or interchangeable
right.
terms.
Right. So with their,
well, you know, I could see how in a case like where there have been mandated shutdowns, you'll say a district, a downtown area, whatever, for any reason, it could be because of, you know, seismic activity or something else, that there's damage that's either, you know, potential or imminent or has actually happened that causes, you know, a mandated shutdown because of just safety concerns. And I think a lot of the lockdowns have come pretty close to that sort of, you know, the sort of thing you can't defy. You know, that they are matters of public safety in the eyes of the people who have crafted them. And I wonder sometimes if this hasn't been done in a way by these various jurisdictions, whether it's a governor or a mayor or somebody else, with the cooperation or the input of the insurance industry.
Oh, come on, they'd never do that.
Minimizing the losses on the insurance company's part because of the way that they have phrased their lockdown orders.
Are you saying that State Farm is a big contributor to Jay?
Yeah. Well, without having any evidence whatsoever and not trying to impugn anybody's motives or their integrity or anything else, I would find it almost unbelievable that something like a lockdown order would not have been done without prior assistance from or input from or approval of insurance carriers because of things like business interruption exposure. I would find it, and I maybe it would be reckless for a city or somebody or a state to do this without consulting with the insurance industry. What impact does this have on recovery? recovery possibilities or your exposure or the city's liability, you know, whatever coverage it has, that somebody wouldn't have been consulted at some point, I guess it would be unthinkable too. But how much?
Well, why would you, other than somebody contributing, which is usually all it takes, why would the governor want to make sure that Flanagan's Pizza gets screwed in that State Farm?
Well, maybe the governor doesn't like that pizza.
But I mean, these are pretty interesting decisions that people are making. They obviously are making them, and making them consciously. I'm not debating you on that.
And they're constantly tweaking them too, Tom, which is what I find interesting. That there's, you know, the percentages, you know, that are being, you know, the communicability of the virus and so on, the rates that go up and down, and, you know, the thresholds for, you know, having a more serious lockdown in the future, all of these are being manipulated all the time. Of course, the public doesn't share in this, the public doesn't contribute to it, but we're told, oh, we're, you know, here we're approaching this, something may happen, and I really find it, you know, extremely interesting that this is the sort of stuff that means, you know, you succeed as a business or you don't succeed as a business, and it's just numbers at a certain level of the news cycle. And it clearly they're numbers that have been tweaked and are being tweaked all the time with lots of input, but not from smaller businesses. The smaller businesses, of course, are the ones that have had to really punt or fold. And, you know, right. If you don't live in or have a business in Lakeview or some trendy neighborhood, try to get a license for a sidewalk cafe in some outlying ward. It's just not going to happen. So there's favoritism, and there's, you know, you're outclassed from a competitive standpoint all over the place. The fact that the insurance industry is perhaps one of the leading figures in this doesn't surprise me at all.
What without you know, talking a little treason here? What line did that come from? What movie? You'll know.
Oh,
I'm going to go talk a little treason.
I can't. I'm having a
the Quiet Man. Here. The Quiet Man. When the guy was supposed to be
quiet.
When he was supposed to be chasing
Francis Gerald, right?
Yeah. When he said when he was supposed to be chasing watching John Wayne and Reno Hero, making sure they're not kissing before they're.
Oh yeah, but they got him out in the cart. You know,
yeah, and then the horse
facing opposite directions.
Yeah, then the horse stops in front of the bar and looks at him, and he goes, "You got more sense than I do. I think I'll go in and talk a little treason."
Great movie.
Our friend Carl, who will hopefully be back on Friday, he's absolutely convinced. Now he of course is at the head of this cavalry charge, but not that he wants to shoot anybody or like that. He doesn't. If there was a doomsday clock between what we're doing now and, let's say, all-out revolution, he thinks we're getting real close with the, or closer than we have been in a while, maybe not real close, in the sense that the mental health of the country is going downhill by the day. And finally, somebody's going to watch the chairman of American Airlines on the CNBC last Thursday talking about how their studies have shown that people sitting right next to each other in a closed room in a plane because of their ventilation is perfectly safe. And the guy owns a restaurant and people got to be, you know, 8 feet apart and 25% full, that they're just going to say, screw this BS. I mean, how you can have two separate rules for people with different, it's, you know, at a point now where you're driving people to where they're broke, you can't feed their families, you can't. You're pushing people a little too far in Carl's mind with ridiculousness. And at some point, even our people will say enough and say, my place is open. If you try and come in, I'm shooting you. I mean, I hope we don't ever get there, but he thinks we're marching down that road very rapidly. I mean, what is your feeling? And I think we put up a lot of stuff in the depression.
My biggest fear from the time the lockdown started back in March, that it's one thing to shut everything down. It's going to be another thing to reopen.
Well, yeah, I was watching 60 Minutes last night on the COVID, and I don't deny that when they dragged people in front of the camera that were really sick and dying in March and April, that before anybody knew how to deal with it, that in fact was the case. But right now, the world has changed, and I think we have to make decisions based on today. But nobody wants to do that, John. I don't know. I don't want to talk more about COVID, but I don't understand why. Whoa. Maybe I got flashing green lights and flashing noise here. I think John will probably call back. But no, I was very, it's one thing to, for every, John saying, it's just one thing for everybody to know that there's no such thing as an even break in the court system if you're small versus big. I mean, everybody's known that since you were 8 years old. It's quite another to actually get on national radio or TV and say, well, everybody knows that. Little guys can't win. At some point, I just think you can't almost codify it. I mean, even though you know it happens.
It doesn't bear very much, inspection. You're not supposed to notice it, I guess. But how can you not notice it? How can you not believe that it's been codified and institutionalized? That this is the way things are going to be, and I really think that the lockdowns have become, a cruel method of deciding who's going to make it and who's not going to make it, and this is the power we wield. And whether it was a pandemic or something else that enabled them to do it, they've kind of proved to themselves and everybody else that we can do it. So I guess to some extent their purpose has been completely accomplished, and there doesn't seem to be any kind of, as Carl has suggested, though, it's reached a breaking point. And now you've got kidnapping plots against governors because of stuff like this. When it reaches that point, I guess we have kind of tipped over the edge somehow.
But, the thing of it is I always, to my fault, I always follow the money. All right? And now if for instance, State Farm gives Jay a bunch of money, and I don't know, Frank, of course, was digging in. Insurance companies have always been a very big contributor to campaigns, and they're big lobbyists. They always have been. So it's not like we're talking out of school here. And I know that they've been big participants in some judges' campaigns. And since virtually half, well, I don't know about half, John, you would know better than me, but an awful lot of the cases that judges preside over are individuals against insurance companies. I don't think that's all appropriate. Do you?
Not at all. I don't either.
But where I'm going with this is, if you follow the money, if you're Jay and you're Lori and you have an ounce of brains, I'm not saying they don't. If you have an ounce of brains, you, even though you're not a judge, you are always going to favor bricks and mortar and small businesses versus insurance companies versus Amazon. Because those are the people that are paying taxes to your city and the other guys aren't. So the interesting part, how this has all gone down, I don't understand why they're favoring people, unless they personally have Amazon stock or... By the way, I was reading something last night where Trump is allegedly, and they claim he doesn't have it anymore, but in 2018 or something, he had Regeneron stock. It doesn't surprise me at all. But at some point, are we really looking at... I doubt Lori's in that group. Who the hell knows what Jay's got in his portfolio or the family? But I sincerely doubt that Lori's playing this game. I would not accuse her of that. She's too anxious to be dictator, but in my opinion... But I'm saying, why would you ever want the Walmart in the suburbs to be selling blue jeans when you've shut down the blue jean place in your city that's paying you property taxes? I mean, to me that is, it is so ignorant I can't go there, especially when you're broke. So, man, what is the motive? I mean, Walmart can't be giving her that much more in her personal campaign to make up for all the people here that are, does Jay really want, 5,000 small bars and restaurants going out because their business interruption insurance doesn't pay? Or would you rather have State Farm pay those people and they continue to pay their tax? I mean, the money is obvious to me which side they should be on, and it appears they're on the other side. Why?
Well, I don't think it's just money that enters into it, though, Tom. And that's why maybe Lightfoot isn't seriously invested in any of these big box stocks, but she may have been promised, a bigger stage if she pursues a particular path, that she'll be on a board someday, or she's already on a board or is waiting in the wings, or that she may have political ambitions way above Chicago. And this is a way of, holding out a carrot to her that, although this looks to be completely against the interests of the people who voted you in, nonetheless, here's what we expect you to do because you've got benefits coming down the pike, and it doesn't have to be money. She might not be as interested in the money as interested in the power.
No, but I'm not talking about where I'm going. At some point, Richard J. Daley, the original Day Daley, is going to be proven right on a few things. You know, good politics is good government. I mean, Lori's not going to make the next level if the city is $2 billion in the hole, or however many million dollars in a hole it is, and she declares bankruptcy and blows the whole thing up. That's not how you become Senator Lori. It's not how you become President Lori.
Look at the way California's going.
Well, but California currently still has all the money from these big firms. And if two or three of those guys left, they'd be in up Bleep Creek without a paddle. Right? So they still have cash in the coffers. As long as the market goes up, they have massive wealth. But if you drop, you know, 50% in the market on some of these stocks, California's got a problem. In my opinion. But what I'm saying is, but at some point when you're the mayor, I mean, you want your own cash in your pocket, but it's also your city. And if your city's broke, I mean, some of that falls on you no matter what happens. Even her. You know, I mean, at this stage of the game with all the political correctness we have, if the city goes broke, she's not walking away from this as the harmed party. She's the participant.
Well, the problem for all these big cities, you know, I can't think of one that I would exempt from this class right now. That's in about the same boat. Chicago is more or less dire straits, but all of these people are banking on a federal bailout of their local economies and perhaps the state economies too, and they hope to be in power at some point where they can tax the bejesus out of everybody and make this ridiculous game, you know, become national policy, and everybody's paying for everybody's big city mistakes. I don't think Lightfoot, you know, or de Blasio or Garcetti or you name them, I don't think these people think the way you and I do about these problems, though. They're not their problems. And they're not going to sink or swim, you know, based on what you and I see happening. They're going to blame it on somebody else. They're going to blame it on the Republicans. They're going to blame it on the rural areas. They're going to blame it on anybody but themselves. So I don't think Lightfoot.
Well, they can try.
The way Richard J. Daley thought about this kind of stuff.
Well, but they can try. But nobody's holding her harmless. If we go under, why would you?
Well, but they seem to be banking on that.
Well,
they really think the way to ride this out is not to get your financial house in order, but to spend more when you don't have the money. And you'll wait till her budget address at the end of this month. I'm just waiting to see what she has to say about how much belt tightening the city is willing to do.
But somewhere
before they have a tax increase, I think, you know, this is going to be a pretty good sign of how other big cities expect to fix things. And it isn't about balancing their budgets. It isn't about getting their fiscal houses in order. It's about destroying everybody else's house.
Well, I mean, I guess somewhere you have to say to yourself, I closed the Best Buy, and yet everybody's being delivered TVs by Amazon. By the way, how much do we make on a TV sold by Amazon? And I don't even know if they paid a local tax, Jen. They might, but I know they paid a state because they have people. They have distribution centers outside of Chicago. I don't know if they have any in Chicago. I know there's one out in Hodgkins or someplace, or was it Bloomingdale? They got one out there someplace. And I'm sure they have a few more. But how could you not say, well, we get, you know, 1% off those guys? We might even say we get the same sales tax. That would be nice.
11.25 if you have a distribution center in, you know, the high tech district in Chicago. Wouldn't that be nice?
Well, say we got the same amount. We said, how much is that Best Buy over there in River Nora, over by the Chief? How much is that place? What do you think their taxes are? $200,000 at Best Buy quarter million,
probably. Yeah.
And so how exactly are those guys going to pay us? We're not getting that quarter million from Amazon, are we? Well, no. So why the hell have we closed this place? Why can't we at least leave it open for curbside or let some people in or something? And they were closed for how long? What, 2 months, 3 months? Isn't that essential?
Well, I wish, you know, local governments saw things the way you did. I think they've just, you know, decided this is not the way to go. It's not about keeping these stores in business. It's not about keeping a viable downtown tourist district. It's not about having hotels at least half filled, you know, instead of 20% filled. None of this stuff seems to have ever been talked about as a policy that we need to, you know, get our ducks in order to accomplish. And I mean, imagine what somebody like any big city mayor would have thought, you know, say 50-100 years ago. This is how you're expected to run a city, by just, you know, not worrying about whether people shop, you know, if there's street traffic, if there's safe neighborhoods to walk around in, or open stores. And this doesn't seem to bother any big city mayor today at all.
Well, I just would like those
and
guys.
The cities that used to, you know, even recently cared about it, like Minneapolis or Portland, seem to have just thrown in the towel. And they don't care anymore whether people are safe, or if they're shopping, or if the buildings are burning down or getting rebuilt. It doesn't seem to bother them either way. So this to me signifies a sea change. And of course, they're all Democrats too. So I mean, you have to lay some of the blame at the complete lack of coordination or good sense in this Democratic Party we have today, but they haven't thought this through better, or at least thought about it, period.
Well, I mean, the thing of it is, I would like, and again, I'm everybody's jaundiced by certain things, and I am exceptionally jaundiced by the regulatory environment that PTI Securities and Wall Street Advisors is in. The fact that these people are basically up our behind all day long. And you know, I could never, and a lot of it, I don't have a really problem with it, to be honest with you, John. I mean, I don't think anybody should come on the air and say, geez, I make 20% every year, never don't, no matter what the market does, and it turns out I don't, I go, I lied. Okay, I get that part. I would never do that, and I don't think anybody should do that. Yet this weekend, I see these two fat white guys sitting in lawn chairs, I don't know if you saw this commercial, both with the little scrubbly beards, and talking about one's a Republican, one's a Democrat, and how could you not vote for this fair tax, because you should just tax these other people, and 97% of the people in the state are going to see the taxes go down. Now, I know Jay is all over this crap, and I want to know that when the first year happens, that we find out that 80% of the people got a tax increase, I want the guy in jail like I would be in jail. Like his people would be happy to put me in jail. Now, why doesn't it reflect up and not down? Instead of just on, it's always somebody else. It's never them. If I can't lie on in a commercial, which I never would, why can they?
I'm with you. Yeah.
I mean, it just, I guess, does it sound like it bothers me? Just saying.
Hell, you're mad as hell, Tom. I can hear it.
But I mean, if I can't, I don't think anybody should have an untruthful commercial, yet they do it all the time. And they can say it's politics, but it's the same thing. You can, I mean, right? What's the difference?
It's false advertising.
Yeah.
You know, it's just,
but when you're talking about an amendment to a constitution, and you're saying that 97% of the people are going to have their taxes lowered, and there's not a chance, there's not a snowball's chance in hell that that's true. Anyway, just saying. John, thank you very much. See you, hopefully this week.
Hopefully this week we can grab a meal somewhere.
Yes.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, well, if we can find a place 6 feet apart,
yep,
with our masks. SP Futures up 23, NASDAQ Futures up 210. This tree is growing to the sky. I'll be right back, Mr. Mike Hart.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We also have Mr. Mike Hart from Tasty Trade with us, as he is every Monday. Mr. Futures up 25 now. The tree is growing to the sky. NASDAQ Futures up 216. Dow Futures up 65. The usual. Let's see. What should we buy? Let's buy Apple. Let's buy Microsoft. Let's see. Where do we got the, where we got Amazon here? We got Netflix, so that's up. We got the Amazon, that's up another $80. And where are we gonna find Google? It's gotta be up too. Google's up 30, but let's buy those five stocks. We'd have yet an unusual day again, I'm just saying. Over here, DAX up 78 points, 0.6%, FTSE up 12.2%, CAC around up 42.9%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 61, that's 0.3%. Over China, it's to the moon, Alice. Shanghai up 86, 2.6. Hang Seng up 532.2 as the yuan, Central Bank of China did some work, and so the yuan is actually down against the dollar. So that's by devaluing the yuan, that of course, helps their stock markets over there at least for a while. As review of Friday, Dow Jones up 161.6%, S&P up 30.9%, NASDAQ up 158.4%. So we need another 5 on the S&P to beat Friday's rise. Bonds 0.78, the Bund minus 0.54. The Bund can't go anywhere. It's minus the whole way. So I don't know why anybody thinks that there's increased good things happening over in Europe. Japan up is above zero still. It's positive 0.03. I think that's a high since it's broken above zero. Oil down 59 cents, 40.01, hanging onto $40. Brent down 57 cents, 42.28. Natural gas over up 14 cents, 2.88, pushing towards 3 again. RBOB down a penny, 1.18. We got gold up 2.20 to 19.28. We got silver up 17 cents, 25.28. May we got for us Trevi Weather Sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We still have the loan issue down on the south side. There was a fatal crash that happened at about 3:30 this morning on I-57 northbound between Sibley and 159th Street. That has an investigation that's been ongoing throughout the morning, and it's going to last throughout the morning rush. So expect significant delays on the northbound I-57. Traffic is forced off at 147th to go around the accident, but then you can use the entrance ramp to get back on once you're around it. So that's the big news that happened earlier this morning
and continually has I-57 blocked. Everything else is quiet out there. Absolutely no delays, accidents, or stalls to report on any of the other area expressways, roadways, or tollways. So enjoy a nice, quiet commute and avoid I-57 on the northbound side. Weather today. Some clouds early, and then we'll have some thunderstorms that are going to roll in around midday into the early afternoon, and then we should be dry by the time you get off work, and should be a nice, pleasant evening, although temperatures will cool off a bit. We'll reach a high of 68, and we'll be in the 50s this evening. Right now, it's overcast and 61 degrees downtown. Still dry, rain coming in a few hours. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 98 today. Right now, it's clear and 69. In sports, the Arizona Cardinals are now 3-2. They beat the Jets in New Jersey 30-10. Sunday night football, it was the Seahawks coming from behind, down 13 at halftime, and then down again late, down by 5. But they scored in the final seconds to beat the Vikings 27-26. Lastly, the NBA Finals are now over. The Lakers are your NBA champions. LeBron James was named the Finals MVP as they beat the Heat 106-93. Winning the best of seven series 4-2. Chief.
Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing fantastic. Chief, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. So, are we keep moving the sky up so the tree can grow further or what?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you're mentioning Apple, Amazon, Google. I mean, these things are, they've been out of control for a while now. I mean, they've been moving up higher and higher. One thing to keep in mind, we have earnings coming up for all of them, I believe. Definitely most of them have earnings, you know, around the 28th, 29th of October. So keep that in mind. You know, a lot can happen around earnings. Volatility typically increases. So it's not unusual to see these things move a lot higher before earnings, have a turnaround, and then once earnings comes out, who knows?
Why do you think it makes any difference?
Well, I don't know if it makes any difference. It hasn't made much of a difference this year, but it's something to keep on your radar. At some point, Chief, I just think we have to reach sort of the limit of where sort of, as you just mentioned, the tree can grow.
Well, you're my formula man. You're my stats man. The other guys, we talk about opinions, but let me ask you, to be very, very simple, when you start valuing things, again, I've mentioned this before, but I don't know if I've mentioned it with you, is when I started in 1980-ish, interest rates were 15%.
Mm-hmm.
And it was exceptionally difficult to value stocks because, for God's sake, I mean, if you could walk down the street to Continental Bank, which is long gone, you get 15.5% on a six-month CD, why the hell would you want to be in a stock, right? I mean, and that was the mentality for, you know, pushing a decade, 8 years, right, at least. But when your pricing models at extremes are somewhat useless because, I mean, right now, I mean, if a stock is going to pay you $5 a year in a dividend or $3 or whatever the number is, and the interest rates anywhere else are zero, the stack is worth infinite, right?
Well, you know, that's the thing with pricing models and interest rates right now. There's just no effect that it has on the equation that we use, especially for options, because options, it is a relatively simple formula, but it can be extremely complex. It depends on how you look at it. But, you know, in options we call the interest rate factor, rho, R-H-O, and it's just it's a non-factor right now. It's so low, and if you're an investor, it makes very little, almost no sense to be moving your money into bonds when you have so many opportunities for a higher reward at this point. Now, that can change pretty quickly. We know that the Federal Reserve does have the ability to change that equation around, and they can do it fast. The one thing we haven't seen is the Federal Reserve surprising the market in quite a while. So I think when we do see an interest rate hike, we're going to have plenty of announcement beforehand. So I think for the next while, it looks like we're going to stay at these extremely low levels of interest And Tom, it doesn't have much of an effect on even pricing stock right now, because it's basically taken out of the equation when it's this low.
Well, it is, but it isn't, because I mean, I have clients that if the risk-free rate were 3%, and they could put it, you know, these are older people, they'd be out of stocks in a second at these prices.
Well, you know, stocks carry a lot more risk right now, and
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, there is an inverse relationship between stocks and bonds. So we know as markets move higher, typically bonds, in price-wise, will move lower, and the opposite occurs. You know, when we're crashing, people are looking for safety. You know, they might say metals are a good place to go for safety. That relationship has broken down significantly this year. You know, the correlation has gone down quite a bit, the inverse correlation, that is. But bonds, that maintains, you know, a relatively decent inverse correlation. So you can, if you had to pick where to put your money in the event of, say, a market downturn, bonds at least are showing that relationship, because the last thing you want to do is move your money into bonds on the expectation the market's going down and then see bond prices. I'm saying bond prices. I'm highlighting that because we're not talking about yields here. We're talking about the prices of the bond, and those are inverse too, not to confuse anyone.
Well, you know what you just said is a 20-year observation and not a 40-year one, that bonds move inversely to stocks, because think about it. If they're both are, you know, if you're looking to put your money where your returns are, they should move in lockstep, right?
What I'm saying is just the movement of assets. So asset allocation tends to move towards the higher expected return. So a lot of times you just see relocation of assets from, say, bonds, which are paying low returns,
right,
and moving those into higher return assets like stocks. So I'm not quite sure what you mean by a 20 compared to a 40-year look.
I
think when you're looking 40 years out, what you're saying? Or are you looking
I'm saying is when, if interest rates were, I'm going to use the term normal, although that's not the right term, traditional or something. And if rates were, let's say, 3% on the, or 5% on the 30-year, I'll make it simple, like when I started, and all of a sudden, say 6% on the 30-year, which is considered to be normal, you know, for a long period of time, 5%, something like that, say 5. Well, if that were to drop, or say go up to 6, it means your bonds go down, correct?
Right.
Right, so if bonds are going down because interest rates are rising to 6, the competition from the stocks now have to pay more, so if stocks are paying a certain dividend or whatever, have a certain income stream going out, and all of a sudden now you're going to value it at a 6% instead of 5, it means your stocks are going down too. Before there were futures on the stocks, before there were the SPOOs, before there was even the Kansas City Value Line, when you traded on the trading floor, there weren't spiders or anything like that, and you're trading like IBM and those things, the thing you watched was bonds. So if bonds went down, you started selling stocks, because the interest rates were the same way. When bonds went up, that's the first thing that happened in August of 82, when interest rates started to go down, is bonds rallied and stocks followed, because they should move in lockstep until you screw the thing up as much as guys have it screwed up now, to where it goes the other way. It shouldn't go the other way. I mean, higher interest rates should not mean good news for stock, unless you're at some sort of weirdo extreme like we are now.
Well, I think that's a good indication that we are at we're in a very different market right now, and the fact that these relationships that we know hold true over time are breaking down, it just adds more relevance to the fact that we really are in an unusual market here. And, you know, I would say it's not a steady market, although, you know, things feel safe because markets are moving higher. I mean, we're up 25 points this morning, and that's a non-event, even though, you know, traditionally a 25-point move in S&P would be considered a, you know, decent move to the upside. I would say this is a non-event. Up 25, we could end up the day down 50, and I think it'd still be in the realm of normalcy right now. So being at these extreme levels to the upside really doesn't mean safety right now. It's just a price extreme that's a result of monetary policy, most likely. We are seeing, you know, decent earnings out of the major companies, which is adding to this, of course. But that being said, with all these relationships that we know work out when you do historical studies, and they're breaking down to the point where, you know, gold is gold's almost positively related to market moves. You know, market moves higher, gold's moving higher, silver's moving higher. Typically, those move lower. Bond prices are still negatively inversely related, but they're not moving anywhere near that level that you would see 20 years ago.
Well, despite what the Federal Reserve, I mean, back in, I'm trying to, not to recreate history that before anybody was even born, that's not my point here, is that I'm trying to draw correlations that the trading at one extreme is almost like trading on the other extreme. I mean, when rates were 15%, the 30-year, I think, only got to 12.5 or something, but near-term got to 15. It was big. Talk about backwardation of the curve. Wow. Is it backwardation when it goes down going out, or is that, yeah, right? That's right.
That's correct, yeah. It's that backwardation that you
see. You know this stuff better than me.
Almost always you see contango, especially right. In the bond market. I mean, that's almost like, during like periods of panic, we saw this in 2008, during periods of panic, you'll see backwardation where rates kind of skyrocket in the short term.
Yeah,
and they fall in the back turn, you know. So you're getting more, for 2 years than you are getting for 30 years. It doesn't make much sense, but it can happen during periods of extreme unknowns. And people, basically, what it comes down to is people aren't worried about the 30-year rate; they're worried about the next year and a half.
Right.
So you see that in volatility as well. Volatility typically stays in a state of contango where you say, okay, a year from now, there should be a lot more movement and a lot more uncertainty a year from now than there is in the short term. And that can change. That relationship can change in periods of extreme uncertainty, where we saw this in February, March, where the short term became very much volatile, so the volatility spiked in the near month, and no one was really concerned about a year and a half out, so we actually saw the volatility much lower. So a very classic example of backwardation.
Well, but you have the mentality, though, and I can remember being a young chief. I wasn't a chief, though. I was just young. whatever being a chief even means. But I looked at the market back then, Mike, and I said, okay, look, we're at 15%. We're not going to 25. I mean, I guess we could, but we're probably not going to. And the market was like 800 in the Dow. And I'm thinking, the companies that are in there now have figured out a way to at least stay profitable, even in this horrible recession and with the interest rates the way they are, and they're still making money. Maybe not as much, you know, obviously, as they could be, and they're being valued like, you know, the part that goes over the fence last. I'm thinking the real risk here is to the upside. It's got to be. I mean, the Dow's not going to go to 100, I don't think. So, I mean, I was admittedly a year and a half early of August of 82. You know, and I didn't, you know, throw everything, you know, balls to the wall long or anything like that, but I mean, I leaned long, thinking if there was going to be a surprise, it had to be long. I mean, it had to be positive. How could it be negative at that point? Well, here, I feel exactly the same way. And of course, you know, I'm way early as again. I mean, I don't think we're going to be like -6% or -3% or -2%. I don't think people will put up with that. I don't think the Fed's willing to go there. I think it would be a total degradation of society as we know it. I don't think we're going there.
And, I don't think so either. And that's my opinion. Of course, it could.
Yeah, it could. It sure could. And the Fed could.
I think it's a possibility.
But the Fed, what I'm trying to impart to everyone is everything you see, every decision you make now, or people make now, and me included, because I'm along a bunch of spots, is that you have this in the back of your brain. What I'm saying is, no way on God's green earth, if the interest rates were going to go to 3% or 4%, something normal, which they will someday, you know, maybe not in my lifetime, but someday, you're not going to sit there and wait. You're not going to give Amazon, you know, $3,300 in the hope that 10 years from now you might get a dividend. You're not going to wait for these people. You're not going to value, you know, Zoom or any of these places at 10 times earnings, because the cost of waiting gets too heavy, like you're saying about in options. You're not going to wait. I mean, in 1977, if I were to say, Matty Weber, you just won $1 million, he'd say, great. And I said, but it's not payable for 20 years. He'd almost say, keep it. At 15% a year, what was it worth? 48 cents? I mean, right?
Right.
So, I mean, the whole valuation mentality, I mean, people are losing track of what normalcy even is. I mean, now it's easy to, I don't care, I'll be happy to wait on Amazon if they start making decent money and paying a dividend in the year or 2030. I can wait. It doesn't cost me to wait. But if it did, I'm not giving up 6% in the bank for 10 years in the hopes that this guy throws me a check 10 years from now. But it's right. Not just...
You know, it goes back to Greenspan, who, you know, said markets can remain irrational longer than you be...
Oh, sure.
You know, and, like, they really can. So how do you play it? That becomes the question. You know, you don't want to sit on your hands for a decade.
No.
And, you know, you got to play the market somehow. I think, ultimately, you can't necessarily be all in. That's what this market's telling me, at least. You can't be all in on one direction. You've got to protect yourself. It's similar to your protective put index or a trade that you do. You know, you're not 100 delta. And 100 delta means you're moving one for one with the market. Market has to go higher if you're long delta. It has to go higher in order for you to profit, and you're doing it one for one. Now, the moment you add a put, you're adding negative delta to the equation, so you're no longer one for one. You're one for one on the upside, but you have some negative delta, which means to the downside, because of that negative delta that was added to the long delta, you're actually going to not lose as much. You're still long delta, but, you know, say you bought a 16 delta put, your 100 delta long stock now goes to 84 delta. So you're only moving 84 cents to the dollar to the downside.
Well, let me ask you this. As I've explained to clients the last few days, I mean, it's very, very difficult. If you look at the volatility going out, I'm not just talking about the VIX. I'm talking about the volatility of the VIX is clouded dramatically by the next week or two. Because the second you go out past that, the volatility explodes, the implied volatility. And the weird part is, Mike, it's not like it's high the week after the election and a couple weeks after. It's staying high all the way out to like March. So my question is, and this is because I don't know the answer, maybe you do. The standard line is, This implied volatility is to the moon, well, relatively very high in the spiders and those kinds of things, the Qs, because of the election.
The historical average is 15.5, and we're at 25.
But I'm saying there's some 30s after the election.
There are. And, well, you know, the curve's in contango there, and it's, you know, they're higher after the election than they are now, but, you know, I think there's a lot of uncertainty being placed around the election. we've seen volatility over 20 this whole year, more or less.
Right.
Take out January and February. I mean, that's, I don't know when we saw that last. Maybe, I don't know if we've ever seen this high maintained for as long. It definitely was in 2016. We had much lower volatility going into the election. This is really at an extreme. Of course, just all the world events going on. I mean, I'm not surprised we have volatility, but there seems to be a lot of uncertainty. If you look at the volatility in the VIX, there's a lot of uncertainty based on volatility, and you've got to go off volatility because that's what the market's
right.
telling us. There's a lot of volatility around the election and after the election. So,
well, Mike, real quick question, because we'll have you, maybe, I don't know if you're Ann or who's coming on tomorrow, you or Jeff, but my question real quick, is it just the election or is it the fact that we're so darn high? Is there more to it than just the election?
That stocks are this high?
Well, I don't know. I'm saying
there's absolutely more than just the election going on. To put this much risk around an election means that the policy changes that you're going to see based on who's elected is getting priced in at a majorly high rate. That's my thought around the election, but you also have to add the coronavirus
yep.
and all the uncertainty around the world. So there are two major events happening to the United States, but one major event happening around the world, and you're going to see high volatility for a while until they get some resolution.
Well, thanks, bud. We'll talk to you about it next Monday, if not before. Take care of yourself. SP Futures up 23, NASDAQ Futures up 207. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's, get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.